Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. I'm Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom Radio and Cowboy Wisdom Visionary Vitality. Tonight, my guest is Christine Paragone. Christine is a mother to three sons, a businesswoman, educator, speaker, author, coach to wide circle of friends. She has a passion for the emerging fields of financial psychology, economic behavior, and the holistic study of money and self. Christine is a founder of Life Services, LLC, a financial education company in Naples, Florida. As an award winner in the Toastmaster International Division, she has the ability to share challenging concepts in an understandable, engaging manner. She has a BA from the University of Pittsburgh and an MBA from the Nova Southeastern University. And Christine is also the author of The Seven Tales of Financial Storytelling and the Transform Your Financial and Personal Life. And I messed up on that. I apologize, Christine. So without any further ado, I want to bring Christine onto the show. And well, welcome to the show, Christine.
Thank you for having me as a guest, Robert. You did great. It's Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life. We put our financial concepts into fable form so that they're very easy to relate to. And they're fables that people have known all their lives, like Snow White and Puss in Boots, except we told them in financial terms so people can convey that wisdom to themselves and to their children, especially, it's building the youth of the United States and giving ourselves a strong economy.
And you just said something, a strong economy. How is the economy struggling? Because not only the American people, but the American leaders don't understand economics.
This is a very sensitive subject. A lot of people don't understand economics. And, especially our congressmen, one of the worst things I think that they did is raise the retirement age for Social Security. What they've done is they took the baby boomers, they shifted the economic scale up so that they could not start collecting Social Security until 67 years old. And so now so many baby boomers are still in the marketplace and working when they're 67 years old. Now, if they stay and they work for just 3 more years, now these are people who've been working 30 to 40 years of their life, Robert. So if they only stay for 3 more years, they get an extra 33% on their Social Security check. So now what is happening, people are staying at work until they're 70 years old. And they have robbed the young people of jobs. Those people are staying in the marketplace. It pays them to stay in the marketplace. The government is paying them to stay in the marketplace. And these congressmen did not realize the economic impact on the young people. Now we have a shift in where the 20 to 30-year-olds generally would be spending, outspending, developing their own homes, getting furniture, getting things that they need. They're not spending money because they don't have the jobs that have been paid, that are still in place for the older generation. And so this has really impacted our economy quite a bit. The one thing that is doing well in our economy is technology. And technology is doing really well because businesses need it. They need it to continue their edge. And so you have a lot of technology doing a lot, and you have banks this year doing a lot better. But consumer spending is definitely not doing as well as it should be.
As an electrician and engaged in the hourly workers in this country really haven't had a raise in a long time to keep up with the inflation that they say isn't there. How would a raise in wages actually help the economy, do you think, Christine?
Well, again, the problem being is that there has been negative inflation, or they are calculating it as a negative inflation, because there are certain products that are going up in price and there's other products that are going down in price. Now, they, because of there's so much food being genetically developed and they're making it more available for people, pricing of food, for example, and price of milk and things like that haven't gone up quite as much as the natural foods. And so now you have people who are working on an hourly basis. They're taking in a lot of, processed foods that they can afford to buy, versus people who are on salary or earning a little bit more money are going into a holistic, more people who are buying, going to Whole Foods. You see a lot of people going to Whole Foods now, and there's a lot of, and you go into different grocery stores, they're also getting more natural foods. There's a whole non-gluten area in a grocery store. And so you have starting to get a distinction in classes between what people can afford to buy and process for their families versus, in a very real way, the people who have the money are buying better food so that they'll be well, and the people who don't have as much money are buying processed foods. I'm a lover of bologna, to tell you the truth, Robert. I love the bologna sandwiches on, just plain bread, crusty bread with mayonnaise on it. Horrible for you. Absolutely horrible for you. But, that's what I grew up with. And, but it's not a good, steady diet. There's difference. You can even take hot dogs. There's the regular hot dogs, and then there's the pure beef hot dogs. And the things that are better for you and the kosher hot dogs, they're more expensive. And these are choices that people who are on an hourly basis, they're making choices on their health that are also affecting them.
And, that is the truth. But, something that I've really expanded into myself, Christine, it is a body, mind. We really do operate on a spirit, body, mind. And when the body is getting fed right, the mind is clearer. Do you see that?
Absolutely, Robert. And the one thing about feeding the body correctly, and something that in religious practices they used to do all the time, is fasting. Whenever I was growing up, my grandmother we had a juice fast every Wednesday, and then every Friday you ate fish. And they tied it into a religious practice. But to tell you the truth, it was only a religious practice because, and they made it that way so that people would do it. It would be, they tied in a well-being to their spirituality. And so they made a religious practice and say, hey, listen, you got to do this or you're going to go to hell. Okay, well, they're not going to go to hell, obviously, but they put the fear of God in people so that they would follow the rules and be well. And then eventually people went, well, listen, if I don't fast on Wednesday, I'm not going to go to hell, I'll be fine. And they lost that whole idea of how cleansing the body actually helped cleanse the mind and cleanse the spirit.
That's the thing. And, Christine, you wrote your book in a story form, in a fable. But how are people more receptive to something that isn't pointed but yet gives them the information, such as a fable and the book you wrote? How does that actually open people up to be more receptive to expand their life, do you feel?
Well, storytelling is really an ancient way to convey wisdom. Every night when parents put their children to bed, they tell them a story, or they used to convey wisdom by saying, this is the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, or this is the story of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And even all the way, I think, up until the 20th century, the turn of the 20th century, most of those fables had a moral to the story. And sometimes it wasn't very pleasant. Now, when Disney got a hold of some of these fables, they made it more beautiful, you know, and they commercialized it. And so some of the things that we kind of think is the original story of Cinderella, it's not exactly the way that it was originally intended. You know, Cinderella, you know, it comes into a happily ever after with her Prince Charming. But she had a lot of hardships along the way. And, you know, and so they, whenever they would tell the story, they would talk about, you know, how Cinderella overcame her hardships, how Cinderella had to deal with her stepsisters, how, you know, how inequitable that it was at the time. And, you know, these are things that we all relate to because we experience things. You know, we have experiences where we feel this is inequitable. We can't deal with this. Or we're dealing with something that shouldn't be. So, you know, it's things that we relate to. Stories be able to tell us we relate to this and we know what that character is going through. And now we can say, and how did that character solve the problem? And we can then take that and make that solution our own also.
And, you know, that's true. And also, Christine, income tax season's here again. What is some tips you could give people for IRAs and stuff now to still get some 2013 tax deduction right now or something to help their 2013 tax deduction?
Well, you know, you do have the IRAs, and that's a wonderful thing. You can deposit your money into there all the way to the point where your tax is due on April 15th of this year. So you can actually make a 2013 contribution, even into 2014, and take the deduction for a traditional IRA. A lot of people, you know, and you can take you can deposit up to $5,500 and $6,500 if you're 50 years or older, because they want to catch up. They know that Social Security won't be able to be the all answer to everyone's problems at this point in time. And so they need to have people. But on the other side, putting the burden on the person to, you know, invest this money that they're putting in, you know, to their IRAs. And so, you know, a lot of people need to find, there's a couple different things that can help people. So one of the things I would say to people is that if you're preparing the tax return yourself, you know, there's a couple different really good software programs out there. TurboTax, you know, is one of them, but there's many of them. The H&R Block, they will walk you through all the individual deductions, and they will help you maximize your deductions. A lot of people don't realize things like sales tax can be deducted if you're itemizing on Schedule A. Some work clothes can be deducted if you're itemizing on Schedule A. A lot of people forget to take the deductions for the mileage that they go back and forth for medical trips or they're parking on medical trips. Yeah, so there's a lot of different things for deductions other than the IRA contribution. I always tell people that you should be tax planning during the year. If you're very late that you should be tax planning is making sure that by September or October, you review all your investments, see if you had any capital gains, see if you have any losses, offset and rebalance. You know, and that's really rebalancing your portfolio is something you should do all the time as part of your tax planning, but also as part of your portfolio rebalancing. So that kind of all ties in together. But definitely you can take that IRA tax deduction. Now, the other tip I would tell people is if they don't want to prepare the tax return themselves and they have a fairly simple return, you can actually go to irs.gov and they will and type in VITA, V-I-T-A, and you can find what they call volunteer income tax assistance. And you call the number or you go into the locations, find the location. And generally, there will be people close to you that volunteer to do your income tax for you that actually have been trained. They have to pass a test before they prepare tax returns. Now, I did volunteer tax return assistance in the past. And there have been there were people that came in, and I had one woman actually cry whenever I prepared her tax return for her. She was so thankful. The person, she had gone to a CPA the year before. She had paid $400 for tax return preparation. The CPA had caught, and she did, and she was living on Social Security. It was almost one of her whole Social Security checks for somebody to, you know, a CPA to prepare a tax return for her. And so I think that one of the things that people need to do is to know that they don't need to, if you don't have a complicated tax return, you have alternatives to paying high fees. And I'm not saying that CPAs don't deserve the rates that they charge. It's just that they have a certain amount of expertise. They are generally handle more complicated tax preparation. And most of the times, people don't have to pay that high of a rate in order to get a tax return prepared. Now, the other tip that I would say is that a lot of times, if you buy these tax preparation, and there might be something, you go in through and you say, oh, wow, I didn't know you could deduct that. I didn't know you could take sales tax. I didn't know you could do this. Or I forgot a charitable contribution. You can actually up to 3 years from the date that you file your tax return, go back and amend your return, tax money back from things that you may have forgotten. And I know that at least one or two of those, you know, software publishers that give the income taxes, and I think even H&R Block or even you let whenever you go to get your income tax prepared, they'll look into the past and see if there's a major error and get you more tax money back. The one thing is it's not unpatriotic to not pay taxes. You know, you're not obligated to pay taxes. Everybody should only pay their fair share and not a cent more.
And that's very true. And, you know, that was all very good advice. And also, the book is called Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And Christine's website is financialstorytelling.com. And I've been perusing it since we've been on the show, and I want to welcome all the guests and give them the call-in number real quick, 718-305-6548 if you have any questions for Christine. But some things I've been reading on there is how you guys are actually, you and your partner, actually engage in people's lives to actually show them the holistic and the spiritual way to handle money. And how is that different than the materialistic way?
Well, one thing, Robert, is that money is never going to be what satisfies any individual. You read a lot of stories of very rich people who are very unsatisfied, always looking for something. You're never going to feel the hole in your heart with money. And it's really true. I mean, it's an old cliche. You know, it's really true that money does not buy happiness. They've even done some studies now that says that, you know, there's a certain amount of income that everybody needs to have in order to obtain a level of comfort. You know, and you can even look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and know that your financial, your basic, right above your basic needs that is at the base of the triangle is, you know, your eating and breathing and your bodily functions. But right above that is just the planning of your financial status so that you know and you have a comfort level of existence. Now, once you have that comfort level of existence, then people don't need to have money in order to be happy. They can use a lot of their own creativity. A lot of times people were very much happier when they would, instead of going to restaurants, they would go over to a friend's house to eat once a week. And everybody would get together and share those things. You know, they would share conversation. So, you know, there's a lot of things that fulfill people in life. And, you know, and money is a good portion of it as far as having a spending plan, but it doesn't provide the be-all to end-all of happiness. What provides that is your faith and the ability to be inspired on a daily basis and pull your creativity into your world and share that and convey that with others.
And, you know, something I discovered, even in myself, but how have we become a servant to money?
Well, you know, I say that in the Bible, you know, there money is the biggest adversary of God, you know, and I'll just use that as a literary content, not specifically for spiritual or, you know, religious. Right? It's just that as ancient wisdom, you know, would develop, is that it, even in the Old Testament, it would say, you know, wisdom is more valuable than gold and silver. Why? Because when you have wisdom, no one can take that away from you. Once you have studied, once you have read, you know, no one can take that wisdom away from you, that experience. When you've, you know, experienced something in life, if you go on a trip, the memories that you create, the love that you generate when you're with family, this is something that no one can take away from you. You know, certainly the people in 1929, you know, and they went through a stock market crash and lost their way of living, you know, there was a lot of suicides that went on, that, you know, they, you know, whenever you attach yourself too heavily to physical things, you can't really be free to live your lives.
And, you know, you said something there, wisdom. You know, how are people afraid to understand money comes actually from their wisdom, innovation, and talent?
Well, you know, people get set in their ways. You know, they get into a cognitive trap. And the one thing that we have done in the United States is that one generation to the next, think that, okay, I'm going to have something better for my children. You know, and that was good into the 1900s and all the way up to the 1920s or so. But, you know, we got to a generation whereas we established a good, you know, level of comfort of the middle class. The middle class came into existence. And that really came into existence a lot because of the formation of unions. Unions helped quite a bit close onto the gap between the rich and the lower class. If you look at some of the what they call robber barons and the people who were very fiercely fought in unions, even the people who were the founders and workers at U.S. Steel that were shot by Pinkertons in the 1920s, you know, they stood up for their rights, and they created a middle class person who has the right to earn and to have a nice abode, someplace that belongs to them. And I think that once one person gets into something, all they really need is something that definitely belongs to them where they can call home, they can feel secure. And once you feel secure, you're set free to do and be what you need to be.
And you said something, you know, about the unions there. How have the unions lost their way, and how is the union concept more needed today than any time in history to you, Christine? Or is that off base?
Well, no, it's no uncommon knowledge that the unions have lost a lot of their bite. You know, they really have. They have failed to reach into the white collar worker the way that they needed to, because as we became a more service-oriented society, the unions failed to provide the education and the training. Now, I come from Pittsburgh. We were a very strong union area, and they, at that point in time, they would take a portion of the workers' union dues, and they would put it into apprenticeship programs, and they would, you know, then they would train young workers, you know, in those particular fields for pipe fitters or crane workers. But as all of those jobs started to go down because we became more of a service-oriented society, the unions failed to reach the white-collar worker. And they failed to do so because management would always identify the best people in the organization. They knew that they had to keep those people and they would pay them adequately. And the other people who were replaceable, they might be ordinarily trained and they could go. And those will never organize in a union. As a matter of fact, there was an article the other day about, I think, a software engineer at Google who makes around $9 million a year. You know, I mean, Google knows how to keep their key people and compensate them for it. You know, so you know, this is something that management did quite well, keeping the key people in the corporations and then not allowing the other white-collar workers or the other white-collar workers getting inspired or thinking that they could possibly rise to that certain area. They failed to unionize and to, you know, but it would have been a good thing for people to do. You know, I know a lot of teachers' unions have been very successful, especially in Pennsylvania. Down in Florida where I am, this is a right-to-work state, so we don't have a lot of unions. And so the teachers here are really not paid as well.
And that's true. And we have a caller. Do you feel like answering the question?
Sure. Let me see if I can.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. What's your name? Where are you calling from? 29516, area code 229. Hello? Anyway, Christine, when it comes to finances, how does the school system really lack the foresight to teach kids about finances, do you feel?
Well, they have nothing. By the human acquisition of information, children actually start learning from their parents and observe how their parents spend money. And a lot of times they will start mimicking the way that their parents spend money. That's their first teachers. But once you get to school level, they don't have anything in school level, in high school, as far as teaching a young adult how to write a check, you know, do checking accounts, balance their checkbooks, invest in anything. They leave all of that as extracurricular activity. Now, there are organizations that come in and do help if the child is interested, and the parents should, you know, encourage it, such as Junior Achievement. Junior Achievement is an extracurricular activity, but it's not part of the regular activity. And so a lot of kids who don't have the opportunity to participate, they don't get this information. They never get the knowledge, and they're set out on their own.
And that's very true. And if, you know, what would happen if the school system started teaching investing and how kids how to handle their money? And, you know, a class about real life, how would that help the world expand in wealth, do you think?
It really would have a tremendous impact. But, you know, the problem is that they can teach the concepts, they can't teach the behavior. Behavior comes from, you know, their everyday culture. And, you know, and that is something that people have a choice in. You know, they have an option whether how they want to spend their money, how they invest their time, you know, and so, but they're, you know, but the problem is that they're not shown another way. They're not exposed to other ways. And by exposing these individuals into a different world, it would improve the way, like I was saying to you about the IRAs. The government has established this, but they have failed to educate people on how to invest in the IRA money. And so now you depend upon either a certified financial planner or a financial advisor. Now, we all know that in the crash of 2008, most financial advisors were doing everything in their own best benefits. You know, when you talk about financial advisors, there's no particular certification there. Anybody can throw financial advisor behind their name. You can, I could say, Robert, you're a financial advisor, and tomorrow you can put out your shingle, say, Robert A. Wilson financial advisor, because there's no certification. A lot of people don't realize that they should look for an advisor that is certified. They either a certified financial planner, they can go to the website cfp.net and find a financial planner that will help them plan, and they will pay a small fee for that. There's a lot of financial planners that do pro bono work. They contribute back to the community. So if people who are having monetary problems, even service people, there's a lot of pro bono work done for our military that people, they'll put it out on the Financial Planning Association, the FPA, puts it out to all of its members, and they organize different groups to say, here, these are people that need help. And then they put out different educational possibilities for different people to do it. So there's a lot, you know, as part of my profession, you know, we go out and we do pro bono work for people who need help. And so, you know, we hope that this is going to help support the economy. You know, the military members coming back from war, they need help. We need to support them and their economy. The Department of Defense is doing a very good job at that for a long period of time.
And that was all very good information. And Christine's website is financialstorytelling.com. Her book is available on her website and on Amazon.com. And it's The Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And I want to thank Christine and all the listeners. We have run out of time. And Christine, give them some financial wisdom, and I'll close out the show.
Well, follow your heart, and the money will follow. You know, you can't buy happiness, but it does help to have a certain level of comfort so that you're free to explore your own creativity. So create a plan. There's a website called Let's Make a Plan, and that will be very helpful to you, whether you're planning for your taxes or your retirement or your estate.
And thank you, Christine, and all the listeners. We'll be here Thursday night with Nora Whalen, and excuse me, and good night, and we'll see you Thursday. And thank you, all the listeners, and a special thank you to you, Christine.
Thank you, Robert, and God bless.